You're listening to Real Talk, sponsored by Marcus Werenberg Theaters. I'm Colin Ritter.
And I'm Peter Lewis.
And in today's episode, we are starting another new series. We are starting a series that we are calling The Decades, where we're going to be talking about our favorite films from certain decades, as well as talking about the different techniques used and the different aspects of the film storytelling that existed throughout that time. So today, we are starting with the 80s, which is probably my favorite decade of filmmaking.
I'd kind of agree. It was the most fun decade. I'll say that.
Yeah. It was, you know, kind of what we always talk about this. It was the quintessential era for escapism. They knew how to really capitalize on this idea of putting you somewhere else and taking you on an adventure.
Oh, yeah. If you're looking for really high-end, artsy, meaningful films, this is probably the worst decade for it.
Yes.
I mean, we had Amadeus and Raging Bull, but let's be real. This was the decade where you went to a theater and you had fun.
Exactly. You really did. And if you look at the movies now, and we actually were just talking about this before we started recording, from an artistry standpoint, pretty weak decade with regard to that. But from, again, as you mentioned, the fun aspect and the cheesy aspect, this decade really capitalized on that.
Well, the 80s were just a time of style and mass escapism, probably because, you know, the chance of a nuclear war was approaching. So,
exactly,
you know what?
Yeah. They had to do something. They really capitalized on this, you know, suspension of disbelief.
Absolutely. And it was probably the best decade. I mean, just thinking about how many good escapism films there were in this decade, it's ridiculous.
It is. And that's something we talk about. You know, we talked about in our previous episode, that doesn't really exist anymore. We don't really see that escapism at the same level that we did see in the 80s.
It's all too formulaic. I mean, cause here's the good thing, because this is when blockbusters were really becoming a thing.
Yeah.
Late 70s, you had Jaws and Star Wars come out, and that pushed Hollywood.
Oh, yeah.
Whenever Hollywood gets something new, they make it perfect, and then it seems like it just dies down. Like, there's no, like, building.
Yeah, that's true. And then
you could say, like, they fired their load way too soon.
Exactly.
But, my God, what a decade.
Well, yeah, it platformed, as you mentioned, you know, Jaws and Star Wars in particular, they really platformed the 80s up to be a great decade of filmmaking. They sent it in that forward motion, that forward trajectory. And, you know, we have a lot of great movies coming out of the 80s. And we're going to be talking about our top three each here coming up. But another great thing about the 80s, you have some incredible storytellers in the 80s. And a lot of those people are still working in the industry today. But you have, you know, my favorite director, you have Steven Spielberg, really capitalizing on the 80s and making a lot of great content.
Absolutely. This is just a decade where everyone seemed to be at their peaks at the right time. And you had actors at their peaks as well.
Yeah.
Story making at their peak. It was, I hate to say, I think it's when filmmaking peaked.
You know, I could agree. I mean, if you look at the AFI Top 100 list, which this is kind of a, you know, a precursor to another series that we will be starting throughout the summer where we actually discuss the AFI Top 100 list.
We're going to be here for all of you,
we're going to be here for a long time, folks. But really, if you look at that, there are a lot of films from this decade on that list. And that's just because there were so many good movies coming out during that time.
Absolutely. Again, even if it's not too artsy, maybe not the best word to describe it, but escapism can be important.
Exactly, because I think it's pure fun for the simple reason of having fun. They didn't have to strain your mind to really think about this deep concept and really contemplate it while you leave the theater. It's just about fun in the moment.
And it's kind of good because we'll get to it when we talk about the 60s and 70s. That was kind of the time when we were pushing the envelope of what film could do
exactly.
as high art.
Exactly.
I think this is a good, you know, let's bring it back.
Yep.
And let's have fun with this.
Exactly. They step back and then just they went full force.
But again, it's not like, you know, cheap. Like, a lot of these films were very well done, even if they were just for entertainment purposes.
Exactly. You're exactly right. I say we just go ahead and get into the list. What do you say?
Absolutely.
So do you want to start us off with your number three favorite film from the 80s? Take it away.
Well, Empire Strikes Back.
Hey, good movie.
Yeah, really good movie.
No shocker there. Not surprised.
Not at all.
Considering how much you hated Rogue One and all the other Star Wars movies, I'm
a little shocked. I hate Star Wars. Just Star Wars is stupid.
Whatever.
Kidding.
I love Star Wars. And you do too. You know it.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I mean, you talk about the idea of sequels, you know, not being. It's rare to have a sequel outdo its predecessor.
Absolutely.
It's even more rare to have the sequel outdo it so much. Like, how did they not get this right the first time?
Yeah. It's
like,
true.
Just from a story standpoint, it was so good. It was very, very simple.
Yeah.
Because, again, you know, even though they had a bigger budget for Star Wars this time, technologically speaking, they still had to...
Practical effects.
They had to. They had to be a little more responsible and just a talented cast. Of course, you know, Lucas wrote the story, but you had Ivan Kershner as the director.
Mm-hmm.
Love that man. And, you know, just probably the most classic and I'd say probably the most culturally significant of the Star Wars films.
Yeah, you actually make a really good point with regard to, you know, a film being better than the original, a sequel being better than the original film. And another, now this is personal because not everyone's going to agree with me on this, but I think another instance of this occurs in the 80s, and I think that's with Back to the Future. It actually did not make my top three list, but it's on my top five list.
Mm-hmm.
But Back to the Future Part 2 is actually my favorite of the Back to the Future films. And I think, again, it's cheesy, it's a little tacky, but gosh, it's fun. And I think that's something, you know, that Star Wars does in a different way. You know what I mean? Or Empire Strikes Back, rather. It does that in a different way. It doesn't put the original in a shadow, but it kind of does in a little ways, because I always find myself going back to watch Back to the Future Part 2 over Part 1, and I assume you would say that you find yourself watching Empire Strikes Back more than you watch A New Hope.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'd say with, you know, Empire and Back to the Future Part 2, it's that they established it extremely right the first time.
Yeah.
That they were like, okay, we don't have to worry about this anymore. We can just move on.
Yeah, run with the story.
We, there's no real plot points to flesh out. We can just move the story forward. And that's the great thing.
And something else I think that's great about these types of movies, they continue the character development too. They don't develop a character in one movie and let it die.
Yeah.
You keep learning more and more about their lives throughout the movies. And I think, again, Empire Strikes Back as well as Back to the Future Part 2, they do a good job of that. They forward that plot, they forward that narrative, and as mentioned, it's just fun.
And again, just going off, you know, Empire, it's just, of course, Star Wars is always escapism.
Yeah.
But you want to talk about just the quality of work that movie was.
Yeah.
I think you have to consider it one of the best of all time.
Oh, without a doubt.
Along with Star Wars, of course.
Without a doubt.
Like, those two are made for each other.
Without a doubt.
And might as well just briefly mention Return of the Jedi.
Of course. I have to mention it.
I know people are mixed on Ewoks. I used to hate that, but now I'm just like, I don't care anymore.
You know,
because you know what?
I like Ewoks.
You know what's great about Return of the Jedi?
What?
That Luke Skywalker and Darth Vader storyline.
That's right.
That was beautiful.
It was. You're right.
And
then we have Episode 3 where they throw the story at you so hard it hurts Exactly. Exactly. I admittedly saw that one like 5 times in the theater, but I digress.
All right, Colin, what was your number 3?
My number 3... probably no surprise to a lot of people, but my number 3 is Who Framed Roger Rabbit from 1988. That is actually one of my favorite movies. It's first off, it's hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an amazing blending of live action filmmaking with animation because, again, if anyone knows me, they know how much I love animated movies. They know how much I respect the art and respect the medium. And this blending, first off, it's a fun story.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and that's the you know, the entire intent of this movie, just to be fun and kind of wacky, because it is. It's a crazy movie.
That's kind of an 80s trope. Everything's built off a simple, fun story.
Exactly.
It's just that they do so much outside of it that makes it work.
Exactly. And for those of you who haven't seen Who Framed Roger Rabbit, first off, watch it. And number two, it's essentially that toons and humans live together. The toons can enter into the human realm, and humans can enter into the toon realm, and, you know, cartoon homes and cartoon cityscapes, you know. So it's just fun. But one reason I respect it so much is because of that blending of those two mediums, because it takes two highly technical mediums, such as live-action filmmaking and animation, and blends them so beautifully, because it's hard to find a movie, I think it's hard to find a movie that does it as well as Who Framed Roger Rabbit. I mean, from simple things like the shadows you see throughout the movie, just little bitty, small, minute details. They do it so perfectly.
The attention to detail, absolutely. And just how they got so many properties of, like, the Looney Tunes.
I know.
Disney characters. I mean, to get them in one film, I mean, to make studios work together.
Yeah.
At a time, let's be real, they were at each other's throats.
Absolutely.
You know, they need to, this was 1988, right?
Correct.
That was when let's be real, by then we realized what the 80s were.
Absolutely.
And everyone was just pumping stuff out.
Exactly.
You know, had to.
Had to.
And to get them all to come together, I mean, that when they go to when Eddie goes to the Toon Town for the first time,
yes,
that the amount of Easter eggs detail.
The references in that scene are incredible because you can watch it. It's literally your childhood coming back at you.
And I think that's what made it so fun.
Exactly. And you're right. It was kind of a rallying
call. And it's kind of adult, too, in some ways.
It's absolutely adult. I mean, just from the character Jessica Rabbit alone, you know, down to the different references they make throughout the movie, it's pretty adult.
I think that's something we've lost in escapism, where you can have fun.
Yeah.
But you can as well, like, have adult situations, have mature themes.
Exactly.
Probably the better way.
Yeah.
Because now it just seems so simplified.
Yeah, you're right. But yeah, fun movie. Again, if you haven't seen it, watch it, because it's just a lot of fun. Moving on to number two for Peter, what is your number two?
Oh, Scarface.
Scarface.
Absolutely.
Go figure, Scarface.
That movie's beautiful.
It is a good movie.
Because I love the style of, you know, 1980s Miami
yeah.
Vice. Just any story related to that, I will go see.
Peter loves mob movies, if you haven't figured that out.
That's the only reason I saw The Infiltrator this summer with Bryan Cranston, because, like, oh, it's set during the 80s and the cocaine stuff? Sign me up.
Peter.
But, my God, this
you're something
movie.
Else. I love it. But you're right. It's a classic.
Al Pacino. This is probably my favorite role he's been. I know that's a controversial thing to say, and I'm going to get a lot of hate for that, but, my God, I love him in this. Because he's believable.
Yeah, I mean, that's the good thing.
When he screams, it's the greatest thing ever.
I know, you're exactly right, though. It is so believable. Mm-hmm. It's not too cliche, because a character like this can be very cliche.
Oh, absolutely.
But it's done so well. It's done very beautifully.
It's done with respect.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Which, it's so funny, because when this film came out, critics hated it.
Oh, yeah.
And now we're at the point where, like, this was a good film.
This is one of the best movies ever made.
That's kind of one of my favorite films. Like, when it starts out, people are like, I don't understand this.
Mm-hmm.
And just decades later, they're like, I was wrong.
Like 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. That Peter's favorite movie of all time. No spoilers there, but spoilers.
Well, for our top 10 when we do that,
yeah.
That's fair enough.
Yeah, we can at least share that much.
But I will say, I think people know by now I love style and film.
Yeah.
As long as, you know, there's a story and characters behind it.
Yeah.
Oh, this film, the style of it's great.
You're right.
Like, they knew what the 80s were before the future, knew what the 80s were going to be remembered for.
Yeah.
And that's what I love.
That is true. I mean, again, Scarface, that's a classic.
And
I mean,
again, it's super violent, which, you know, I love, because I'm a Tarantino fanboy.
Oh, dear God.
I subscribe to the Church of Tarantino.
I'm not a Tarantino. We've talked about this. I don't hate Tarantino, but he's not my favorite.
Fair.
You know?
We're in the 80s, Kyle.
Exactly. Yeah,
back to the 80s.
We can agree to disagree.
That'd be another episode.
You brought him up.
That's true.
Yeah, so that's on you.
But yes, Scarface, violent, Miami Vice style, perfect film.
So essentially, a Grand Theft Auto video game in the form of a movie.
Yeah, Vice said he was heavily inspired by this movie.
And Peter loves his Grand Theft Auto.
Oh, dude.
As do I. I mean, who doesn't?
Mr. Colin, what was your number two?
My number two is actually a movie that's, believe it or not, a lot of my top three movies here in this decade are also on my top 10 to 15 list of favorite movies of all time. So my number two for this decade is from 1985. It's The Goonies. Are just Goonies, but amazing movie. Gosh, you know, the quintessential escapism adventure movie, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, it's a fantastic adventure.
It is. It's an adventure, and it's fun, and it's, as a kid, it's kind of scary. You know, as a kid, like, I was terrified, you know, by, you know, the fact that these kids were going on this adventure, and how could these people who were so young do this? And it's a movie that I watched from a young age. You know, my parents showed me this movie as a kid. And it's honestly, I'm going to say that it's one of the big reasons I love movies and filmmaking so much, because I think it's so beautifully done. Obviously, Spielberg, my favorite director, was on the team. He didn't direct mm-hmm. this movie, but he was on the team that produced The Goonies. And I think you see his touches throughout the film. And it's just great. I love it.
Couldn't agree more. And I think what I love more is that they found good child actors.
Absolutely.
I mean, especially in the 80s, 90s, child actors were hit or miss.
Absolutely.
You had six or seven in the group?
Incredible
actors.
That were
great.
Yeah.
That weren't annoying. They were fun to watch. You cheered for them.
See, that's the thing. The characters were lovable, too. That's another thing with The Goonies. The music, gosh, the music's great, too.
I think the setting helped well. Astoria, Oregon looked beautiful.
Absolutely.
In this movie.
It does. And it makes you want to go there and try to accomplish the same thing they did, you know, kind of uncover this, I mean, that's pretty high fantasy, but uncover this hidden treasure, you know, on a pirate ship that's, you know, lost in this cave somewhere. But yeah, great movie. Gosh, I mean, I assume most of our listeners, you know, if you're listening to this podcast, you've seen The Goonies. And if you haven't, come on. Go see The Goonies. It's one of the best movies of all time.
It really is.
As far as I'm concerned. But, Peter, let's transition here. Number one.
Actually, I feel like
before
number one, there's a lot of films we can mention.
Okay, fair enough.
How about the rest of the best?
All right, we'll pump the brakes, talk about the best of the rest.
We can't do 80s without mentioning John Hughes.
That's a fair point.
Because Ferris Bueller's Day Off just missed my top three.
Great movie.
16 Candles as well. Very good.
Yeah. Ghostbusters.
Breakfast Club. I'm not a fan.
E.T.
Not a fan.
Yeah. Peter has an unpopular opinion. He hates the Breakfast Club.
We might get into that one day. And, oh, my God, Fast Times at Ridgemont High is probably my favorite high school movie ever.
Really?
Oh, God.
Any specific reason? I'm just curious.
It's probably the black sheep when we're describing, you know, 80s as pure escapism, because it was a pretty serious drama.
Yeah, that's true.
But it was so funny.
Yeah.
But the character of Jeff Scampoli is one of my favorites ever.
Yeah. I mean, we've mentioned a few, just so many great movies coming out of this decade.
Oh, my boy Stanley Kubrick with Full Metal Jacket, happened.
I'm actually really surprised that was
Platoon.
On your list. Top Gun, Beetlejuice, Coming to America. Great movie. I love Coming to America.
Oh, a lot. They're apparently going to remake it.
Oh, they can't.
Can't
do
wait
that.
For that.
Can't do that. I love how we refer to Hollywood as they. They can't remake it. Nightmare on Elm Street. You know.
Oh, my Friday the 13th.
Yeah.
That's just the decade when it was. It got stupid fast, I will admit, but my God, I love it.
Yeah, we talked about that in the horror episode. You know, interesting.
This
you know,
the perfect time.
They can take. Go ahead.
Well, even horror, I don't think we mentioned Evil Dead and Evil Dead 2.
Yeah, that's right.
Those films are brilliant.
They are brilliant.
Evil Dead 2 should be in the top five of the AFI 100.
Yeah, I could agree.
It should be with
I
their,
could agree.
It should be there with Citizen Kane and Godfather.
But you're right,
100%.
The '80s. It was so interesting because you have these great horror franchises, and I'm not going to get too much into this because we had a whole episode dedicated to this, but they kind of latched on to this idea of the 80s and what it was going to become in this ultra high, you know, fantasy, not high fantasy, but high adventure, and they just, gosh, they ran some of these movies and these franchises into the ground that had potential to be incredible.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, a lot of great movies coming out of the 80s.
You can't be
Caddyshack.
You can't be 100% successful.
Exactly. You can't be. But it's not afraid to try.
All right, we got those mentions out of the way, so
yeah.
Number one
for Peter.
If I could vote in the AFI 100, I would do Godfather first, Citizen Kane, RoboCop.
RoboCop. Why am I not surprised? RoboCop.
RoboCop is the greatest, smartest satire action film ever made.
Yeah, there's a lot of truth
to that.
It is
perfect.
It's good.
It's absolutely perfect. Because it's so cynical, but it's so fun at the same time. Like, it walks that tight line.
Yeah.
Because at any moment it could fall over, but the way they directed it, the way these characters act, oh, it's so fun.
It is. I'm not, part of me is surprised that RoboCop actually beat Scarface and Empire Strikes Back in your book, but
I think it's
you're an enigma, Peter. You never know what to expect.
It's because RoboCop just is so much perfectly, and it doesn't have to go too hardcore into detail. It's all so subtle, like it doesn't hold your hand at all. But you know, oh, this is what they're doing now. That's what they're trying to say. This is what this means.
Yeah. And it does kind of scream the 80s.
Oh, absolutely,
it really does.
The design of the RoboCop itself.
Nothing wrong with that. I wish I could have been a teenager in the
80s. I love how. It actually feels like what a robot human being would be in the 80s.
Yeah.
It would be so slow. It would be inefficient as a police officer, which you're trying to market.
Exactly.
And again, it has the greatest scene ever where the Ed 209 just destroys that businessman after the malfunction.
Yes.
Oh.
Gosh, I haven't watched RoboCop in so long. I need to rewatch that.
Oh, I watched the remake a while back. That was bad.
We're not going to talk about
there's
that.
There's kind of an allegory here where RoboCop in the 80s predicts, you know, a future just soulless, you know, straightforward, you know, thinking and creativity.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what the RoboCop remake was. In some ways, like, I don't know if that was a creative decision. Probably not. I don't think they were that smart.
Yeah.
But I will say, for what we have for that first film, it is perfection.
I'll give that to you. Fair enough, Peter.
Absolutely perfection. I know it's a weird pick, but if you've seen it, you'll probably be like, that's a good film.
Then again, all my picks are kind of weird, too, so fair enough.
Yep. Well, Colin, your number one, I know, but I'll let you say
yes.
it.
Yes, so my number one movie for the 80s, which is also my number two favorite movie of all time, spoiler, is Raiders of the Lost Ark. Indiana Jones. Gosh, I love Indiana Jones. It's the quintessential adventure. I know I've said quintessential like seven times. It's the quintessential adventure film. It really is. I mean, you watch it as a kid, you want to be just like Indiana Jones. You watch it as an adult, you still want to be like Indiana Jones. It's just fun. Gosh, it's fun. I love all three of the original Indiana Jones films. This obviously being my favorite, but just that whole franchise as a whole. We're not going to talk about the fourth one. That's not important. But or the, you know, just recently announced remakes that are coming. But Raiders of the Lost Ark, the music's incredible. The direction was incredible for obvious reasons in my book. And I mean, Harrison Ford is such a lovable protagonist in this movie. I mean, he's a hero, but he's normal at the same time. It's just great.
And you had Spielberg and George Lucas working together.
I mean,
that sounds great. That's just fantastic.
Exactly.
And when they were still at their best.
Exactly. I mean, you have two legends developing this. And, I mean, there is not a single thing I would change about Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Oh, absolutely not.
Nothing at all.
What I love about Raiders is when Lucas made Star Wars, he was kind of paying homage, you know, Flash Gordon, the serials of his day.
Yeah.
But he put it in space. Here he kind of... Because, again, Indiana Jones is heavily based on, you know, past serial killers. Not serial killers.
What is going through your head,
serial dear? Characters. You know, that would play before films back in the day.
Yeah.
Like these special, you know, pre-movie movies.
Yeah.
And they turned it into an actual movie, and it's so fun.
That's incredible. And the sets, it's just incredible overall. I mean, from any angle you look at it, I wish, and I say this a lot, I wish we could go back to the days of practical effects and monstrosity sets as a side, you know, when compared to like blue screen or green screen.
Because you can kind of tell the actors are having more fun when it's practical effects because
they're
getting to do more.
You get to do it, yeah. You know, either have a stuntman or you do your own stuff.
And that's when you're being creative.
Exactly. And it helps. It helps, you know, further
the story. It
actually
lets you get into your character because, you know, Indiana Jones has to do a lot of stunts in this movie.
Exactly.
Character and the actor.
Yeah.
In some way, shape, or form.
You're right. And, I mean, I don't even have a lot to say, believe it or not. Raiders, it's just such a good movie. It's a movie I can always come back to. We've talked about this before. You know, you can have movies in your top 10 list that you love but don't want to watch all the time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But Raiders is a movie I can literally watch all the time. I mean, I believe it was last week or the week before, I had a Spielberg, like, marathon. I watched 5 Spielberg films in, like, 3 days. And this is one of them. I could just watch this over and over and over again. And honestly, never get tired of it. I mean, everything about it, the music, the actors and actresses, the setting, the story, you know, that it's such great plot development, such great character development without over-exaggerating it. You know what I mean?
I think that's the thing the 80s did well. They keep you coming back.
Yeah.
Like, I've watched RoboCop, I don't know, probably 20 times at least.
Yeah.
And I still want to come back because I'm like, it's just so fun.
Yeah. It's the same
Nothing's
sort of feeling.
Nothing's new to me. I'm not catching anything new, but my God, it's so fun to watch.
You're right.
I think that's what makes the 80s so fun.
Yeah.
You're not getting a lot of quality high award films, but you know, you are getting...
That's a good point, yeah.
But you are in some ways, I would debate... Well, I would probably give him RoboCop Best Picture. But
fair enough. Fair enough. Maybe taking it a little far there.
Oh, I'm taking way too far. But I think just they did escapism right.
Yeah.
And in kind of a smart way, too.
Yeah.
Where it is kind of art. I would debate.
Yeah, fair enough.
I would say it's kind of art in a lot of ways.
I don't disagree. Fair enough. So yeah, I mean those are our top three for the 80s. Do you have anything else to add?
No, I guess we just tell the people decades will be 90s, 70s, 60s, golden age, and the beginning of film.
Yeah, birth
That's
of film.
What we're looking at.
And you know, me being me,
maybe not in that order.
Maybe exactly. That's what I was about to say. You know, me being me and Peter being Peter, we said we're going to do a decade show, and we're just going to start right in the middle because why not? What better way to start? We're going to take the Star Wars approach, and we're going to start with Episode 4. So fair enough.
But then we're going to go to probably Episode 2.
Episode 2.
Confuse the kids.
We're going to confuse them, and then by the time we get to Episode 7, we're just going to be retelling Episode 4 again. So
that's what we're doing.
I mean, that's essentially what we're doing. But yeah, so this has been the 80s episode.
Yeah.
Nothing else.
Fantastic.
Perfect. So. As always, guys, you know, be sure to check us out on iTunes, Google Play, KRCU.org. You can see all of our shows there. And if you get a chance, get on Facebook, go to KRCU's Facebook page, give it a like, because not only can you keep up with what's going on at KRCU as a whole, but you can keep up with us and what's happening with our show. And we're preparing for a lot of really exciting summer series episodes, and we're not going to give too much away now, but we have a lot of exciting stuff coming this summer, and you're not going to want to miss it.
We gave so many hints, I don't think we need to say it anymore.
Yeah, we don't need to say it anymore, but it's going to be fun. So, as always, from Real Talk, I'm Colin Ritter.
And I'm Peter Lewis.
We'll see you at the movies.